Shrimad Bhaktivedanta Swami Tsunami. Namaste Sarasati Devi Gauravani Vacharya Devi Sisas Namaste.
Today we're reading from Bhagavad Gita. Oh, that's Chaitanya Charitamrita. Reading from Srimad Bhagavad Gita, Chapter 11, The Universal Form, text number
44. Tajmat pranamya pranidaya kayam. Prasadaye tvam aham isham idyam. Piteva putrasya sakeva sakyu. Priya priya yarhasi deva sodum. Tajmat pranamya pranidaya kayam. Prasadayitvam aham isham idiyam. Piteva putrasya sakeva sakyu. Priya priya yarsi deva sodam. Tajmat pranamya pranidaya kayam. Prasadaye tvam aham isham idyam. Piteva putrasya sakeva sakyu. Priya priya yaharsi deva sodum. Tajmat pranamya pranidaya kayam. Prasadayitvam aham isham idyam. Piteva putrasya sakeva sakyu. Priya priya yaharsi deva sodum.
Can you read that?
Piteva prutasya sakeva sakyu. Priya priya yaharsi deva sudam.
Tajmat. Therefore, pranamya, offering obeisances. Pranidaya, laying down. Kayam, the body. Prasadaye, to beg mercy. Tvam, unto you. Aham, I. Isham, unto the Supreme Lord. Idiyam, worshipable. Pita iva, like a father. Putrasya, with a son. Saka iva, like a friend. Sakyu, with a friend. Priya, a lover. Priyaya, with the dearmost. Arhasi, you should. Deva, my Lord. Sodum, tolerate. You are the Supreme Lord, to be worshipped by every living being. Thus, I fall down to offer you my respectful obeisances and ask your mercy. As a father tolerates the impudence of his son, a friend, the impertinence of a friend,
or a wife the familiarity of her partner, please tolerate the wrongs I may have done to you.
Please repeat after me.
You are the Supreme Lord, to be worshipped by every living being. Thus I fall down to offer you my respectful obeisances and ask your mercy. As a father tolerates the impudence of his son, a friend the impertinence of a friend, or a wife the familiarity of her partner, please tolerate the wrongs I may have done to you. Krishna's devotees relate to Krishna in various relationships. One might treat Krishna as a son, or one might treat Krishna as a husband, as a friend, or as a master. Krishna and Arjuna are related in friendship. As the father tolerates, or the husband or a master tolerates, so Krishna tolerates.
Om Agyana Timarandasya Gananjana Sarakaya Chaksaran Meditam Gena Tejmai Shri Guru Venama.
I was born in the darkness of ignorance. My spiritual master has opened my eyes to the torchlight of knowledge. I offer him my reciprocal obeisances. So because we are not this body, it's our duty to glorify Krishna. And that's what we're going to do tonight. We are spiritual beings. So that is our real business. So after Arjuna kind of was shaken down by seeing the universal form, he became very afraid. Because Krishna revealed his inconceivable power to him. So it is said he was shaking and he was shivering, his hair standing on end. He was very greatly afraid. His mind became bewildered and he became very fearful. And after seeing that form, he realized that Krishna is the Supreme Personality of Godhead. And then he started to repent for being familiar with Krishna as his friend. Because when you're with a friend, sometimes you compete with your friend, you know. Like sometimes you want to put your friend down. Or you want to do... Familiarity breeds contempt. So you become a little bit inattentive while how you deal with your friend. And sometimes you may offend your friend. But because he's your friend, he's not going to take it seriously. But still, Arjuna realized that he was doing that with Krishna when he was with him as a friend. But now he saw the majesty of Krishna and he started to feel uncomfortable. So now he wants to apologize to Krishna for being impudent. He appealed to Krishna that just like a father tolerates the impudence of his son, a friend, the impertinence of a friend, or the familiarity of a partner, please tolerate the wrongs I may have done to you. So that's the idea. Like Bhagavad Gita is not impersonal. It's a dialogue between two persons. The impersonalist commentators, they try to put some impersonality in the Bhagavad Gita, but how can that be? When two persons are talking to one another, and each time they talk to each other, each time they address each other, they address themselves in very respectful, venerable terms. Like for example, Arjuna or Krishna will call Arjuna Dhananjaya, O Dhananjaya, O Partha, O Kunteya, O Bharatarsava, and all these names by which Krishna addressed Arjuna are respectful terms and venerable epithet, and they mean something personal. Like for example, Dhananjaya means Arjuna who is the conqueror of wealth, and there's a whole pastime behind it, right? You know that pastime. Arjuna went to conquer the wealth for the Rajasuya sacrifice. There's a whole story behind it. So Krishna evokes that, O Dhananjaya. And then Arjuna will call Krishna, O Madhusudan, O Kishishudan, O killer of Kishi demon, killer of Madhu demon. So those are names of Krishna that this depict his pastime, something he did in the material world. Killed big, powerful demons.
And throughout the whole Bhagavad Gita, there's so many different names and so many different epithets that they address each other. So, and they all mean something they did here in the material world or in the spiritual world, like Madhava, husband of the goddess of fortune, like that. So how can these two people who talk together in personal terms throughout the whole Bhagavad Gita as the intention of merging together and becoming one? It doesn't make any sense. You know? How if they always talking to each other separately and addressing each other by different names depicting pastime and the material world, why would they do that if the whole purpose of Bhagavad Gita is to understand that we are all one and they are one too? Krishna and Arjuna are one, but they're not one. They're two, and they're always addressing each other like that. It doesn't make any sense like that. So the Bhagavad Gita was spoken by Krishna to establish the supreme authority. Like, everybody is functioning in this material world because they have an authority. Either they have their wife as an authority, or they have their children as an authority, they work for them, or they have the authority that they follow, maybe a religious authority, or they have a political authority, like they surrender to the king of the country or the president of the nation, or they follow their own mind as an authority. But everybody is functioning in this world because they accept some authority and they follow that. So Bhagavad Gita is to establish, okay, there's many authority, but which one is the supreme authority, the best authority? If you follow the best authority, then you're going to get the best result. So Bhagavad Gita is meant to establish Krishna as the highest authority. Now, how does the Bhagavad Gita do that? Well, this is a clue is given by when the name that's most often used in Bhagavad Gita to address Krishna is not Krishna, it's Bhagavan. Bhagavan Uvacha, Bhagavan Uvacha, Bhagavan Uvacha, Sri Bhagavan Uvacha. Because the name Bhagavan elaborates on the word Krishna. Krishna is the all-attractive, but Bhagavan explains how he is all-attractive because he has six opponents in four. So one may be looking for Bhagavan. Okay, let's find Bhagavan. Who is Bhagavan? Okay, so Bhagavan is the person who has the most beauty over all others, who has the most knowledge over all others, who has the most riches, the most fame, the most renunciation over all others. Now, who is that person? Let's look for it. Let's look for it on this earth planet. So who is that person? So sometimes people look for the most beautiful person. They have beauty contest, male and female, and they elect somebody. Oh, this is the authority in beauty. You know, we found it, you know. Or in strength, they have like boxing fights or UFC, you know, whatever, to find the top, most powerful man. So he is, oh, here he is. He's the most powerful man. So they're looking for the highest authority in one of these opponents. Or the richest person, sometimes they have books, magazine. Okay, who's the richest person in the world today? Oh, this one, you know, Bill Gates or somebody. I already got one. I can only handle so much mercy, you know. So, if you look for that Bhagavan, even on this earth, you'll find someone who has the most beauty over all others, the most power, the most fame. It'll be somebody, right? Somebody's got to have that. But, okay, maybe he's the Bhagavan on this earth planet. What about all the other planets? What if there's somebody on our planet that is more than him in all these other things? So you can look everywhere. Look all over this universe and all over all the other ones and everywhere, and then you'll come to the Bhagavan. Now, he might be Krishna, maybe, I don't know. We can look scientifically, but scientifically it's not possible, so we rely on the revelation of the scriptures, which are without flaws. Anyway, Krishna has been
described as the real Bhagavan. When Krishna went on this planet Earth 5,000 years ago, he showed that he was Bhagavan, because nobody could defeat him in fighting and in beauty, although people try to, many demons try. People like Jarasandha called himself Bhagavan, or Pandraka, or Dantarakra, they called themselves Bhagavan, and people thought they were Bhagavan. But when they met the real Bhagavan, then the truth was revealed. So this way Krishna proved he was Bhagavan, not only on this planet, but also it's explained he fought Indra, he fought Shiva, also he bewildered Brahma, like that. So he built, like he's, seemingly he was the real Bhagavan. So, now, Bhagavan is the highest authority. Krishna is the highest authority. Because, why is he the highest authority? Because if he has unlimited knowledge, he has better knowledge than anybody else. Nobody has equal, the same amount of knowledge he does, but he has extra, a lot more knowledge than anybody else. Then that makes him the best authority, automatically. It eliminates everybody else. So, he is the highest authority, and also it is explained, but because he has all these opulences in full beauty, full power, full fame, full, all these things in full, it makes him without material wants. Like, we have material wants, because we don't have full power, full knowledge, full riches. So we're looking for these things in this material world. Everybody is looking for money. Everybody is looking for fame. Everybody has material wants because we have a material body. So anybody you're going to meet in this world who's a conditioned soul, he was going to want to exploit you. When he shakes your hand, he's thinking, what can this person give me? You know, because I need this. I need that. I need money. I need this. I need a job. I need this. What is this person? This person give me these things. So even if you find a friend in this world, this friend is in material want. How much can he help you if you're in trouble, right? Only a little bit, maybe not much. If you ask your friend, if you need money and you go ask your friends, you see how much money you can get from them. Not much. So you ever tried that before? Yeah. Okay, your experience in the matter. They'll give you a meal, maybe, so you won't die in front of them. But maybe they're more generous, they can help you more. So the idea that because Krishna has unlimited opulence, he has no material wants. He's complete, and it makes him fully independent, in a position with our condition, which we are dependent and in need all the time. So can we be the best friend? The Sarita Basarva Bhutanam? We can be the best friend a little bit. I mean, we can tell somebody about Krishna. But ultimately, Krishna is the only true best friend because of his position as a Supreme Person. So the other thing that makes Krishna special is that if he has no material wants, then he won't want to cheat you, because a person in material want will want to cheat you, you know, because he has all this motive behind his head, his condition, and he has many desires to fulfill, and he's bewildered by the material world. So if you meet him or meet anybody, which most people are like that in the material world, They're going to want to cheat you. They're going to pretend they're very rich or very intelligent or very knowledgeable, and to try to get the better of you, to take something from you in different ways. The scientists do that. They say they have all knowledge, and they have big laboratories, and they can give you a TV and a cell phone, and they can give you a new computer. Therefore, they are the authority. Therefore, we need money to pursue our research. So pay us. And people pay money. They pay money to them, you know, because they think they can be helped by these people. But they're cheaters. They cannot really help, ultimately, because they give only material gadgets and paraphernalia that just become litter, garbage.
heaps in the end. You know? If you go sometimes, people throw their computer away, right? When they're all dated. It's so much garbage because of these computers, cell phone, that it's a danger to the planet. It's floating in the ocean, all this plastic stuff. So what can they give, you know? But they're the cheaters. But Krishna won't cheat us because he has no need to cheat us. There's no reason why he would want to cheat us because he's got everything. So because he's so full and so powerful, he's naturally inclined to want to help people. He just want to help everybody, you know, because he feel compassion for everybody that is suffering in the material world. He's enjoying all the time. So he sees people in this world struggling with their... He says that in Bhagavad Gita, you know, everybody in this world is struggling with their mind and senses. And they go from one birth, one reincarnation after another, and they swim in the modes of material nature. They carry it away. Sometimes they're a dog. Sometimes they're a cat, a human being, a demigod, and they go back down up. Krishna sees all that. And he's so powerful and full that he feels compassion. He says, oh, I wish these people could be liberated. I wish to free them. So he has no desire at all to cheat anybody. So if he has unlimited knowledge and he doesn't want to cheat anybody, when he speaks, we get the truth. That's the result. If he has unlimited knowledge and he doesn't want to cheat us, he wants to help us, when he speaks, whatever he says will be the absolute truth. Right? That's the conclusion. Therefore, the Bhagavad Gita is the highest authority. Because it's free from cheating, it's free from ulterior motive, and it's spoken by the most powerful person, Supreme Person. That's why we follow Bhagavad Gita. And by following Bhagavad Gita, we get the result of becoming liberated. We become, by following Krishna's instruction, the best we can, as far as we can understand, then we see the result in our lives, that we're protected by Krishna in the form of Bhagavad Gita. So, that's the idea that so in this world, in this world is a reflection of the spiritual world. So because Krishna has all opulence in the spiritual world, all these opulence are there. When we read the description of Dwarka city or Vrindavan, and they describe the gardens and the palaces and the beauty that's there, wow, it's so opulent. I wish I could go there, you know. Because Krishna's riches, Krishna's beauty is all also expanded in these paraphernalia. The city of he lives in, the forest he lives in, where he is, everything is an expansion of these six opulence. So that's what we are meant for. That's where we're supposed to be. That's where we were in this place. So when we forget all that and we're thrown into the material world, we have a natural anchoring for beauty, a natural anchoring for opulence, and we become attracted to whatever of these things are here. Right? So in this world, there's some opulence, some beauty, some knowledge, some strength, you know. So we naturally gravitate toward these things because they are a reflection of the original thing. Because we don't know the original, we're attracted to the reflection. So in this world also, because it's explained here, originally in our spiritual body, we have Krishna, a relationship with Krishna, either as a friend, either we are the servant of Krishna, or we are the friend of Krishna, or we are the parents of Krishna, or we are the lover of Krishna. So also, this reality is also reflected in the material world. In the material world, we also want friends, we also want a lover, we also want a master, we also want children, have children, and be their parents. So in the material world, we also want the reflection is there.
But the reflection is contaminated by the most material nature. That's the problem. There is, these things are there and they attract us, but when you try to taste them, it's like tasting sweet rice mixed with sand. Sweet rice tastes very good, but if it's mixed with sand, it ruins everything, right? So in the material world, it's very difficult to have a relationship with somebody, you know, because it's always a problem. And somebody who wants to get married, so many things he has to do, you know. It's so complicated. He has to find a job, and he has to keep the job, and he has to get a house, and, you know, get all these things. And when the children are growing up, he has to educate them, he has to send them to a good school, and on, it piles up and piles up and piles up. So much so that after a while, as devotees realize, all that just to enjoy a little bit, oh, it's not worth the trouble anymore. You know, like, if you have to do all that, Krishna makes it so hard in Kali Yuga to get a little bit of enjoyment, like Prabhu was saying this morning, might as well forget about it and just become a devotee and renounce everything right away, right? So, but in Krishna consciousness, it's a little bit different because the struggle for acquiring these things can be dovetailed for the service of Krishna. And instead of becoming the burden of the beast, it becomes the burden of love. And we can execute these duties because of the connection with Krishna. Oh, the children are Krishna's devotees. The wife, the husband, is a Krishna devotee. Therefore, I'll do my duty. I'll do what I have to do because they can serve Krishna. So Krishna can be served. So it's a different perspective. It makes things a little bit lighter than the material burden. But also by executing our duty that we have chosen for ourselves, either as a brahmachari or a grihastha or vanapasa or sannyas, whatever duty we have chosen, by engaging our senses and mind in executing that duty and doing the required activities that are necessary to do that duty, and, you know, utilizing our intelligence, our mind, our body to fulfill that duty, while the intelligence, the mind, and the senses become purified by that connection with Krishna. That's the idea. That Arjuna, Krishna didn't tell Arjuna, okay, sit on a chariot, no problem, I'll fight. You know, I'm God, very easy for me, I'll kill everybody, you just sit there. He didn't say that. Arjuna wanted to do that. He wanted to leave. Oh, that's too hard. I can't do this. Kill my friends and all that. I can't do that. That's too painful, you know. And I just want to renounce everything. And Krishna chastised him. No, this is your duty. You have to become purified by rendering this service for me. I'm hiring you to do this job. I want these people to die. They're all rogues. They're all cheaters and They're not devotees, and they exploit everybody. And then I'm hiring you. You're my killer. I want you to kill these people. You're expert doing that. You got all these weapons, and I'm hiring you as an assassin. And I want you to kill all these people. That's what Arjuna was. Not exactly like that. It was a kshatriya with codes of conducts and all that. But ultimately, he just killed everybody that came in front of him. You know? So Krishna wanted him to do that for him. And while he did that, he became self-realized. His senses became purified by serving Krishna in that way. So when we serve Krishna in our way, whatever our duty is, we also become purified. Therefore, whatever material things are there that could be used in Krishna's service, we don't reject it. We utilize it. Go yukta vairagya. We utilize it to serve Krishna. And then we become purified like that. So that's some of the items. So in Krishna consciousness, we have a wonderful opportunity to expand the mission of Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, the mission of Srila Prabhupada. And whatever we do will be remembered by Krishna. Whatever we voluntarily surrender, whatever we voluntarily give to Krishna, will be accepted as service. Even if it's just a wish,
Sometimes we cannot do something, but we wish we could do it. Even that wish is accepted by Krishna as service, you know. So we have a really wonderful opportunity to make spiritual advancement, and I recommend everybody to do that, as well as myself. Okay, so I'll stop here. Do you have any questions or comments? We have a wonderful opportunity to serve Krishna within this movement. And by that opportunity, we are delivered. So I recommend everybody to do that. To serve Krishna. We are already doing it. We're devotees. But let's do it more. To curb that anger is very difficult because we're conditioned, and when we're deprived of something we want, we become upset with Krishna. You're right. We become angry with Krishna. But to become angry with Krishna is not as bad as to be indifferent to Krishna. You know, the two things are different. If you're indifferent, you don't care. That's one thing. If you become angry with Krishna personally, you can also become liberated like that. Because it's explained that whichever way you approach Krishna, through lust even, or greed or anger, you can become purified because you're contacting Krishna. But it's explained we have to tolerate the urge of anger and all the other things. So somehow or other, we have to bring ourselves under control. And it resolves itself by controlling our mind, because the anger comes from our uncontrolled mind. All these qualities, lust, anger, bewilderment, envy, all these things, they come from our mind, because our mind is not controlled. It's like running ahead, you know, it's like running by itself. Like sometimes you wake up in the morning and your mind is in a mess, like, You don't want to get out of bed. You're thinking, why should I get out of bed today? What's the reason? Better stay here. I don't want to face the world. You know, but the mind is in a mode of ignorance because we slept for 6-8 hours, whatever, and we wake up. But the mind's not controlled. But as soon as you chant your japa, even at the beginning of your japa, you're still in the modes. You know, like you don't even know you're chanting japa. You start to realize you're chanting japa at round number 15. You know. When the 15th, 16th round comes, you start to remember Krishna a little bit, and it's over. Like, you finish your 16 rounds. But the only way to conquer over anger against Krishna is to chant Hare Krishna. There's no other way. You know, you have to bring your mind under control and focus your mind on the mantra, because it is said that for those the chanting of the holy name dances in the courtyard of their heart, it conquers the activities of the mind. But the mantra can conquer the activities of the mind. So we have to apply ourselves to this discipline to chant the mantra, because the mantra means, even though you're uncontrolled, the mantra will do the job for you if you chant it. Sometimes we think, I have to be attentive while chanting. But Prabhupada says, you have to hear the mantra. The mantra is meant for that. It's a mantra. That's what a mantra is. It will do the job if we chant it. So we have to chant and try our best to hear. And we'll see that if we chant sufficiently, a sufficient amount of mantra, after a while, your mind starts to transcend the situation. And then your anger dissipates. And then you realize that, Krishna is a better shelter than my anger. And you also realize that, because the anger comes from, you need something and it's not there, and you become frustrated.
And but when you realize Krishna is there behind that, you realize, oh, there's a higher shelter than that. If I have Krishna, I don't have to worry, you know, about whatever. Krishna will arrange it for me. So it requires a certain amount of faith, right? That's what it's explained, that the chanting of the holy name is only for those who have faith in it. That's the only price you have to pay. If you have faith, you're going to chant, right? So we have to conquer anything, whether it's lust or anger or bewilderment of our mind or whatever, we have to take shelter of the holy name, because it's Krishna himself. And by chanting the holy name, Krishna will manifest his power. So therefore, it requires sufficient discipline, sufficient attention. What happens sometimes, people complain about different things, you know, that the process doesn't work or whatever. It's not happening for me, because they're not sufficiently disciplined. They don't try hard enough. You know, in a matter of, well, if you want to become good at something, you have to try hard. You know, like if you talk to the top athlete or the top musician or the top anything, there's thousands of hours of practice to achieve that perfection. So in devotional life, which is the hardest thing to do, we have to have a great dedication to chanting, and we have to put some efforts, not just casual space stuff, you know. We have to work hard on it, you know. And sometimes, even though we work hard, Maya is so powerful, it will take it away from you anyway, you know. Like, you'll do something unexpected, and all of a sudden you're cheated, and you thought, well, I didn't expect that one, you know. But what can you do? You have to go back to the chanting. There's nothing else you can do. Go back to the chanting. You just think, well, it happened because of my past sinful activities, and it happened because Krishna wants me to learn something, and Krishna wants to show me that I have become even more sincere. And even though I thought I was that very sincere, still there's a lot more progress to be made. So there's a reasons, right? So we should never be discouraged. Sometimes it's painful, sometimes it's miserable, but we have to understand that we're not the mind. Like, we're not the gross body, we're also not the subtle mind. And the way we treat the subtle mind is only one way, is to chant and engage in devotional service. And it will work, and in due course of time it will happen. Okay, we can stop here. Any question? More question? Okay. Thank you. Haribo. All the way to Prabhupada.